Yeah, it's Mr. Encore. Fantasy sports and politics crew. Yeah, check. Fantasy sports and politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, log on. Peace.
All right. Hello, people. Yes, it is on Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. As always, you know what time it is. It's FSP Crew Show. I am your host, Jerry, JT, or a.k.a. The Master, and I'm joined by my co-host, Jeff the Joker, and as always, we engage in conversation, get you about information about fantasy sports and politics. We got a informational show, great show in store for you today, tonight. The number to call in is 347-637-3220, 347-637-3220. 3220 is the FantasySportsCasino.com hotline where winners play and players win. How's that? Okay. If you want to go on the chat, we have a chat room also open. That's for your convenience. Like I always say, what you put into it is what you're going to get out of it. You don't put anything into it, that's exactly what you're going to get. Nothing. But without further ado, let's bring in my esteemed Jersey guy, a.k.a. Jersey Jeff the Joker. I call him Jeff Jersey Joker. Anyway, what's up, Jeff? How you doing, my man?
Hey, Jerry. What's going on?
Nothing much. And I'm also joined by my esteemed founder of the FSP, on the FantasySportsCasino.com hotline, where winners play and players win. Mr. Victor Gardner, how you doing there, Vic?
That's fine, but you kind of got that all backwards. But we'll work with it.
No, where players win and winners play. So whatever. I know what you want to say. Yeah, you want to say winners win and players play, but I like where winners play and players win.
That's
sounds
cool.
Better.
But you sent them to the wrong website. It's
FantasySportsCasino.com hotline.
Fantasy Sports Book and Casino.
Thank you.
.com.
Thank you very much. I left that book out. That's very important. Yes, it's Fantasy Sports Book Casino.com hotline. And this show is also sponsored by the same organization.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Before we get into some dirt or whatever, let's have something that we want to all rejoice on. I don't think Jeff knows this. He may, but I want to send out a huge shout out. Much respect and congratulations to Mrs. Sylvia Crawley Milbury, who has become the new, not head coach, but an assistant coach for the Indiana Fever. And it's much deserved. And a quote from Sylvia is, "I'm so excited to join the Fever family. This feels like unfinished business for me." Sylvia Crawley, who previously played for the head coach, what's her name now? Oh, my God. Lynn Dunn, I'm sorry. And at one time was drafted by the Fever. Another quote she has, "It's always been a dream to coach in the NBA. I was advised many years ago to go get some coaching experience, and now that I have done that, I feel like I'm ready to coach at this level. The Fever has been such a first-class organization in this league that I feel fortunate to join their staff. It is a team that competes, always seems to get to postseason play, and has great leadership. And like I said, she played for Coach Dunn before, so I guess when the coaching vacancy that was vacated by Mickey DeMoss, Lynn Dunn reached out to her, or she may have reached out to her. It doesn't make a difference. She's now a coach or assistant coach on the staff of the Indiana Fever. So I have to give much respect and a round of applause for Ms. Sylvia Crawley, one of our former hosts on her own show, is now a assistant coach with the Indiana Fever. Victor, your comments first before I go to Jeff and then bring in our other caller.
Well, I want to congratulate Sylvia and ask her for our finder's fee. I'm always got my hand out. But, no, really, Sylvia brings a lot to the table as far as experience and a support system. Excuse me. She has Coach Hatchell down at the University of North Carolina to lean on, her own experience as a head coach at Boston College, and that entire Tar Heel Nation. So I'm quite sure her passion and her desire will rub off on the Fever, and hopefully she'll be looking at a head coaching job sometime soon or in the very near future. And, Army wives do have real jobs. Hers just happens to be on the national, on the professional basketball level for women. So congratulations, Sylvia.
Jeff.
I'm familiar with Sylvia. I don't really know her, but she's part of the FSP family, and I'm glad to see that she's moving on in that direction, and I wish her a lot of success.
Black, welcome to the FSP Crew Show. We're glad to have you on the Fantasy Sports Book Casino.com hotline. What's up, my man?
Oh, man, dead tired, man. I had to come and do the show, man.
Oh, we wouldn't want to burden you, Black. well, do you care to elaborate? Why are you so exhausted?
Oh, man, I've been working since like 5 this morning, man.
Oh, okay. Well, you must be a person in high demand, so that's always good. That means you're needed and not unwanted. So, anyway. Your thoughts on Miss Sylvia Crawley Milbury, on Mrs. Sylvia Crawley Milbury, let me get that right, because she's a married woman, and being appointed assistant coach to the Indiana Fever in the WNBA.
I didn't know her too well, but congratulations to her. Sounds like a good job to her.
And I can only see bigger and better things for her. I can see a head coaching job in the future. She's getting her feet wet. In the women's professional league now, getting that valuable experience as an assistant coach, and as knowledgeable and she is, I can see that in the future, don't know when, she'll be not the assistant coach. That moniker will be put off there, and she'll be the head coach of some WNBA team. Anyway.
If she's any good, I'll put in her resume for the Washington Wizards after the season.
Well, I mean, we're about to transition into basketball, but your Washington Wizards are in the playoffs, and I don't understand why you are saying that about your Washington Wizards when they have a shot in the playoffs.
Have you watched my Washington Wizards?
They're in the playoffs. So
no, I asked you a specific question. Have you watched my Washington Wizards?
Well, no,
in the playoffs. Everyone knows they're in the playoffs. Have you watched my Washington Redskins?
No, I have not. I can't say I
have. Have you realized that how many 10 and 20-point leads they have going into the fourth quarter that they just blow? They just blow the game.
As in losing the game or just blow the lead and barely hold on to win?
As in losing the game.
No, I'm not aware of that, but I think you will tell me.
I mean, I'm proud of the squad. They made the playoffs this year, but, yeah, I was on the Whitman bandwagon for a while, but these games have been killing me these past couple of weeks, along with the season of having big leads and just blowing it in the fourth and losing. I'd like to see a stronger head coach in here.
Okay. Any thoughts on who it may be?
Right now, no. I mean, I wouldn't mind if Sam got a shot. You know, Sam right now is our assistant coach, Sam Cassell.
Uh-huh.
But maybe a guy like Avery Johnson. What's the guy? He's still out of work right now. What's his name? Is it Hollins? Lionel Hollins?
Lionel Hollins, yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Memphis Grizzlies old head coach.
Yeah. Bring somebody in. As long as it isn't Dan Tony, just bring somebody in.
Wow. Oh. Well, Dan Tony just got the dreaded vote of confidence, and unfortunately, it looks like the Knicks head coach Mike Woodson is going to be available in the near future. And I like Woodson, but it doesn't matter my opinion. And you know, Phil Jackson's going to probably want to bring in someone who he's more familiar with, which is that's the way it usually works. So Phil will probably, well, there's not much left. Let him finish the season. And, you know, Phil seems like a classy guy, and hopefully he'll handle it the right way, and Woodson won't have to read about it in the papers.
Mm-hmm. Well, Larry Brown is pissed at how they handled the Mike Woodson in New York. Have you been reading about that?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't catch that. Oh, man.
Yeah, they had an interview, and one of the comments, Larry Brown, I can't say it verbatim,
Larry
but this
Brown.
Is what Larry Brown said, that a lot of people consider Phil Jackson a great coach. He didn't say Phil Jackson is a great coach. He said a lot of people consider Phil Jackson a great coach, but he thinks it's a horrible way that they're treating Mike Woodson to bring somebody in. If they bring somebody like that, they should bring him in as a coach, not in a situation that's taking place right now. And it's very disrespectful to do it the way they're doing it. Am I getting that right somehow?
Yeah, you have the gist of it about right. I mean, Woodson came in, I had a solid season. Things just unfortunately fell apart, but it's just the way that they're handling the whole situation. I kind of agree with Larry. They're shafting Woodson up there.
You know, I'm not a big fan of Larry Brown. He has a reputation, which he's looked good, you know, for what he's done at SMU, but he should just keep his mouth shut at this point, you know, because he knows about doing people wrong. No, you know, he really does, because, you know, he did the Nets wrong. You know, they finally put a team together. You know, they were heading to the playoffs looking good. And then, you know, late in the season, I'm leaving. You know, I think he even admits to all his moves, that was the only one he regretted. But that, you know, set the pattern of him being a whore, you know, a guy. To put it bluntly, I'll give him credit.
Really?
He was a guy who could come into a basketball team and the team would usually end up winning more games the next year. You know what I mean? Because, you know, the knock on guys like Phil Jackson and Pat Riley is, they won because they had great players. Well, you know, Larry didn't always have great players. You know, he won with good players, you know. But, you know, he's had these feuds. He had a feud going on with Hubie Brown. No relation, and there was no love lost there. They had a feud going on. And believe me, you know, as a coach, I'll take Hubie over Larry any day of the week.
Oh, Hubie is great. I love Hubie Brown.
And I just think Hubie got burnt out, and he didn't want to deal with today's player.
And also, you know, with all due respect, he was getting older. He had some health problems that made it tough with the travel and whatever. But, you know, I mean, is there anything Hubie doesn't know about basketball? I mean, he really knows the sport inside and out. I mean, and when he was having that feud with Larry, this said it all. That summer, Larry was running a camp for players. Hubie was running a camp for coaches. That says a lot.
Mm-hmm. All right. Vic, do you want to chime in on this anywhere or no?
Yeah, I mean, I'll throw a little something in there. You know, going back to the original concept of what we're talking about for Black, as well as me, what we'd like to see in Washington, I actually wouldn't mind, and this has been rumored to happen in L.A., but I don't know if it's going to happen. I wouldn't mind seeing how John Wall would work with his former college coach, John Calipari. I don't think Calipari is ready for the pro game, but I think it would be interesting to see how he would use John Wall again and develop Bradley Beal.
He does not develop anything. He brings them in and they go out.
Well, I know. That's why I'm saying it would be interesting for me to see something like that happen.
I don't want him experimenting with my Washington Wizards. You send Kyler Perry elsewhere. I just saw Kyler Perry get out coached by a first year coach that took his team to the national championship. Kyler Perry has too much experience to get out-coached like that, but I don't want him here with Washington. You try to experiment elsewhere.
Well, I got it, Black. I feel you. But at the same time, you know, I don't think the current coach is going to go anywhere since we've made it to the playoffs the first time in, I think, what, 6 or 8 years. Now, the Wizards are set to play Toronto, if I'm not mistaken, in the first round. And if that happens, no, is Toronto in the East or in the West?
Nah, we fell to the seventh seed right now, so it's looking like we'll be playing Miami.
Okay, well, you know what? That would hurt. But I think that the team has come together pretty well, depending on, you know, how they develop their talent. I don't think the head coach is going to be let go. He might be given another lease on life. I would actually say, if we win two of those, five games in the first round versus Miami, you might even see an extension. The problem is that the players can't hold the lead. I wouldn't say it's the coaching. It's the players. They're letting down at the final quarter. As far as the Larry Brown situation goes, you know, Larry Brown has a lot of experience. He has a lot of knowledge and stuff like that. But at the same time, you got a guy there who was a little bitter at New York at how he got treated, you know. And I think that whatever Phil Jackson does, yes, it's going to be an experiment. It's going to be an experiment. Whether he gets Brian Russell or whoever to come in and coach, you know, it's going to be an experiment because – if he doesn't re-sign Carmelo, he has a lot of money on the books. How's he going to get rid of that money? And how's he going to build a strong team? That's the problem that he's facing. So we'll see what happens there. But
the rumor is, it's been a rumor ever since Phil Jackson took over, that he's going to bring in someone that he coached that is never coached at a pro level, somewhere like Mark Jackson, Steve Kerr, who's an analyst on TV, and seems to grown in favor of the media, as saying that's going to be the next head coach of the New York Knicks because he is he knows the type of offensive philosophy, because he's done it, that Phil Jackson coaches. So that's the scuttlebutt or whatever ever since Phil Jackson has taken over the presidential duties of the New York Knicks. Vic, what do you think about that before I go to black?
The triangle is coming to New York, huh?
Well, if Steve Kerr comes in, I imagine maybe not the full-blown Phil Jackson triangle, but a reasonable facsimile of it, I would think it would be coming, because that's basically the only offense Steve Kerr knows like the back of his hand, because he's played it for so long. Vic.
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't think Steve Kerr is the right coach for New York. Maybe a Midwestern team or something like that. But New York City is going to eat him up alive because he isn't that type of person. I think if they were to bring in a player, a former player, they need to get somebody that has you know, I will venture to say this. I would actually go out and grab the Nets went out and got Jason Kidd, right? It was like days after he retired. Go get a Kenny Smith. Go get a what's my man name? Rick Fox, even. If you're going to do something like that just to get the name recognition or to bring in somebody that can handle the spotlight, sure. But Steve Kerr got punched in the mouth or in the eye by Michael Jordan and didn't do nothing. And nobody defended him. So guess what New York's going to do to him? They're going to punch him in the mouth, kick him in his knees, and slam the boy's head on the hard concrete. You know, so I don't think that's a good move. Go out there and get a name off of TV. He'd be better off getting my man from former Memphis coach. That is the best candidate out there, in my opinion. Period.
Black.
Why not bring Patrick Ewing into the fold?
You know, there you go. Right there. That is perfect, Black. Perfect. Former player, beloved New York Knicks, and he's been coaching for quite some time. That will fill the seats. And he knows the purchase of being a head, of being a coach. Perfect. I didn't even think about that. That would have been perfect.
Okay.
Even Reggie Miller.
Before I go to Jeff on his comments, you guys got to understand something. If you don't understand it already, Phil Jackson's philosophy is the triangle offense. Phil Jackson's probably going to want to bring somebody in that's going to run what he. He's won multiple championships with. So those coaches you're talking about, I do believe none of them are familiar enough with the triangle offense to run it efficiently or to teach it or to show it efficiently versus someone, and I'm not endorsing Steve Kerr, but versus someone that has been in that offense and experience what you need to experience in running an offense and knowing what the offense is all about and understanding the offense. Now, those are great candidates. I'm not disputing any of them. But Phil Jackson is a man that has marches to a different drummer. He does his own thing, and in my opinion, he's going to bring in somebody that's going to be in line with what he believes is a winning formula, and that's a triangle offense. Jeff.
So I guess your dream is to see a blonde-haired Dennis Rodman roam in the next sideline, huh?
No, I feel like Vic here, but I'm just being realistic here that he's the president, and he's going to bring in somebody that's going to carry his philosophy on the sidelines as a coach. That's all I'm saying. Jeff.
You know, someone earlier had mentioned Mark Jackson, and Mark Jackson just fired late in the season two of his assistants. That's odd. You know, one was Brian Scalabrine, you know, the guy who sat on the bench in the NBA for about a decade.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it was an easy transition to being an assistant coach for him. I mean, And he got they sent him to the D League, and then I forget the name of the other assistant coach that Jackson fired. I'm not sure why, but I would have liked to have seen Jackson coach in the Knicks. Not that it's going to happen now. And I mean, they had some drama with the Nets earlier this year when a kid, very early in the season, fired Lawrence Frank. And Frank had a big contract for an assistant coach, and it was guaranteed. And I think they were trying to make a settlement. And they had a huge argument, and they weren't able to patch it up. I mean, this whole thing with the Knicks, I mean, I like Phil a lot. But, you know, this is classic Knicks. This is the Knicks since I've been a kid. They're always looking for the savior. I'm not kidding. It sounds almost sacrilegious, you know, either a player or a coach or executive who's going to save the franchise. And, you know, when I was a kid, it was Spencer Haywood, it was Marvin Webster, and some of these guys were good players, but they weren't good enough to save the team. And, you know, at this point, Phil doesn't have the front office experience. I just don't know if it's the right situation. And I'm thinking, you know, I wish they would try to find, instead of finding Phil Jackson, I wish they'd try to find the next Phil Jackson. I mean, before he was coach of the Bulls, he was coaching the Albany Patroons in the CBA. He paid his dues. I mean, it helped that he was known for being a player in the league, but he really paid his dues. And it's hard to imagine now because Phil is so revered. But a lot of people had a problem with him because, he was deemed as some kind of hippie type or something back from his playing days. I think he might have smoked some marijuana, maybe some LSD, and was sympathetic to that. And because of the Buddhism, that they didn't give him his respect, you know, they just put that label on him. And, you know, I can't remember the last time an NBA coach came from the CBA. And now the CBA, I don't even know if the CBA is still around. They got the D League because Isaiah Thomas destroyed that league. But I'm just using that as an example because there might be a guy in the D League, not a big name guy, but a real solid guy who could be the next big thing, and I'd rather see him go that direction than constantly bringing in big names who are maybe a little past their prime and maybe not the right fit.
All right, speaking of Morris Jackson, I saw somewhere, I forget exactly where it was, that supposedly he's on the hot seat, that if they don't do well in the playoffs, that he may be history. The co-owner of the Warriors declined to assess the job Mark Jackson has done this season, saying it would be evaluated after the season whether or not the team meets expectations. This is a quote for him. We're having a good year. It's not over yet. Interim results do not matter. Remember this. What matters is at the end of the year, we take a look back at how we did and see where we can improve. The general manager already addressed the issue with a vote of confidence, which is that dreaded vote of confidence, that he would let those words suffice. We believe that Mark Jackson is fully capable, and we're confident in his ability to keep it going in the right direction, keep propelling us like he has all year, and we believe that he's going to continue to be successful. We believe in his ability the rest of the way. The rest of the way, that's the end of the season. The dreaded vote of confidence, and saying that we'll assess his job after the season is done. Now, you get the team that languished out of the playoffs for so long and has been playing extremely well ever since he took over, and you get he'll be evaluated after the season whether or not the team meets expectations. That doesn't sound good. If there was a coach outside of Patrick Ewing that I would probably want, I would go with Mark Jackson. But I still say the same thing. It's Phil Jackson's team. He's the president. He's running the show. and he's going to want to get somebody in there that has his own philosophy, just like Phil does. I mean, run the same philosophy in the offense. So I'm looking for somebody that used to play or is going to be mentored by Phil Jackson. So it is what it is. Anyway, let's move on to this. What I want to talk about. What did I want to talk about? Let me see what I want to talk about here. Getting to the end of the season, very close to the end of the season. And ever since a player from the Oklahoma City Thunder been going on a scoring tear, Kevin Durant has been named, not named, but has been pushed to the forefront as the consensus MVP. LeBron James placed on Mount Rushmore of NBA winners, MVP winners, I should say. We'll have to wait. This time around, I think Kevin Durant deserves the MVP. And James, who was looking to win another MVP, back-to-back, I should say, is going to have to probably take a back seat and not win his league history fifth. Anybody dispute this? Anybody want to say LeBron probably, I don't know the numbers, probably put up the same amount of numbers, but now it's Kevin Durant's turn? Or is it immediate hype, and that's the reason why Kevin Durant is going to get the MVP this year and break the string of LeBron getting it? Go to Black, then Vic, then and Jeff.
Yeah, I don't think LeBron is just playing head games. Go ahead and have your regular season MVP, KD, because I'll get the finals MVP.
Okay. Victor.
All right. You know what? LBJ is he's got the championships. I honestly think that and I'm going to say something that's probably going to upset you guys or people that like LeBron, but he's a baby. And an example of that is when the Nets beat him. The problem I saw was that he expected that foul call. But LeBron has committed that same type of foul in the last seconds of a game, and it wasn't called on him. So, you know, I don't think he is the league MVP this year. I think Kevin Durant is the league MVP with Westbrook coming in and out of the lineup, you know, working with only one other real star on that team. He's the most valuable player to that team and in the league. He's becoming on par with notoriety as LBJ, but it's all about nothing. I really think that KD has earned the right to be called the league MVP.
You know, some people think there should be another award, like Player of the Year, but sometimes that would be redundant with MVP. At this point, I mean, does LeBron really care about MVPs? He knows for his legacy, he's got to get rings. And I guess with Westbrook out, it's made Durant's play more important, more impressive. But just on a personal thing, I'm pulling for LeBron a little because my mom started watching basketball this year. And you know, so if you watch on TNT or whatever, they show the Heat a lot, and she likes LeBron and she likes the Heat. So I'd like for him to get it to make my mom happy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move. Let's transition from basketball to football, because there's some interesting things going on with football here. You know what? I want to talk about this because before we go away from basketball, I want to talk about what took place on Monday and what took place on Tuesday.
Big salute. big salute to KD for breaking MJ's, what was that, 40 game or 41 game score for 25 points?
Yes, 40 games. I think he did a 41 game. I think MJ had a 40. Yes.
Big salute to the homie, KD.
All right. As you guys know, who watched UConn basketball on Monday night when the men's played, when the men's basketball team played Kentucky, and I thought they were going to lose against Kentucky. They pretty much, even though the score was like was 60-54, in my opinion, it wasn't really that close because you could see, in my opinion, that the better team, the more experienced team, came to play for the most part and did what it needed to do to take home the title. And if I'm not mistaken, UConn in championship games is undefeated. I'm talking about the men's. Is undefeated. And they take home the title with a second-year, I think he's second-year coach, Kevin Ollie. And Black says he out-coached Calipari. I'm not sure about that, but...
Slow down,
Black. Let me just, I'm almost finished, and then I'll give the floor to you first. But it was a not the game that people hyped it up to be. It was okay, but it wasn't as much as the media hyped it up to be. And I'm going to give Black the floor because I think he wants to talk about Kevin Ollie versus John Calipari and the coaching job he did. Talk to me, Black.
Yeah, Calipari, lazy coaching job, man. When you haven't been tested for years and you get all the best talent, you don't work extra hard with X's and O's. You just push that talent to do what they do. Kevin Ollie, he had those guys working from the beginning to the end. I mean, putting in big work, X's and O's, all the little nuances, the hustle, everything that you would expect the coach to have. And if Calipari approached this game like that, maybe it would have been a different outcome. But nobody even expected UConn to be there in the first place.
Victor.
Well, I didn't get to see the game. However, if you look at the road that the Huskies had versus the road the Wildcats had, you would agree, in my opinion, that Ollie did the better job. He had to change his coaching – well, he didn't have to change his coaching style. He had to adapt his players' playing style to attack and defend four or five different types of plays. His team was down 3 points with 1 minute to go in the first round, and they could have been eliminated by St. Joseph's. Those guys, you know, they came back and won that game and consequently went on to win the national championship. And I do believe both men and women in UConn are undefeated in championship games.
Yes.
I'm not certain. Okay. But, you know, it's a difference of, you know, adapting to who you're playing and you know, taking their weak points and making them your strong points and stuff like that versus what Black said. Calipari gets some kids, and they just go out there and play. Even though they surprised me too. Last year they were abysmal. This year they came together at the end and made it all the way to the title game. So I really think that Ollie did a better coaching job because Calipari usually gets some, you know, great talent, go to the championship or get close, and then they're gone the next year and he retools. So, you know, he didn't do that when he was with, not Temple, But when he was in the Atlantic 10, I forgot which team he was the coach of, but when it was Calipari versus Temple and
UMass.
When he had Marcus Candy and those guys, he had guys there for a couple years, and he actually coached them. But, you know, ever since he left UMass, it's one-and-done city. So, you know, that's my thoughts.
Jeff.
Yeah, was it just me, or was that game a little sloppy? The turnovers, the ball handling, the shot selection. I was hoping for a little bit of a better quality game, but it was still a good game, and I was rooting for Connecticut a little bit because I almost attended UConn. I like that school a lot. I visited up there, and it just blows my mind. That's the fourth men's championship, not to mention all the women's championships for UConn mm-hmm. basketball, which puts them in elite territory. I mean, with all their victories, Syracuse has one. Georgetown has one. UConn's got four. And now this is the first with Kevin Ali as the coach. I think Jim Calhoun is still part of the program, but he's not the coach anymore. I'm glad they were able to make that work because I'm sure that has a lot of benefits to have his experience. But some teams, once they lose that coach who puts them on the map, they lose a lot of ground. The program suffers. I think that's why Coach K and Duke. Did anyone ever say his real last name? He made a big deal that he planned on being there five more years because it affects recruiting, you know, because all the other schools will say, well, you know, he'll be gone after a couple of years. But, mm-hmm. I mean, UConn with the four titles is just so impressive. And, you know, in Kentucky, you know, this is one of the historic elite programs. And the thing I don't like about sometimes about fans of those types of teams, they're so spoiled rotten. They were, you know, almost any college basketball fan is happy about Final Four. And in Kentucky, they were grumbling because they lost. And, you know, a guy like Calipari doesn't need a lot of motivation to move on. You know, and, mm-hmm. you know, he gets a lot of criticism, but he's really made the most of this one-and-done thing. And you think about it, because every year he's got to reinvent his team because
right.
that's almost unheard of. But something else in college basketball that's become very prevalent that you don't hear as much about is the transfers. It's like, you know, in the big-time programs, like, half the guys are transfers. I don't know what to make of it. I remember, I think it was in the 80s, a lot of schools were going with the guys who were coming from the two-year schools. UNLV was good at that. But then it got more credibility when reputable guys like Bobby Knight were bringing in the guys from the two-year schools. But they're, you know, like, let's say about 15 of the top college players are going to be one and dones and go to the NBA. But there's something like in Division I, like 400 transfers. That's a lot of guys.
Yeah,
you know, that's a lot now to do with success in college. It's not just recruiting from high school. It's keeping your guys from transferring and maybe getting a few decent guys to switch over to your program.
All right, that happened on Monday night. One night after the UConn men won their fourth national title, and like Jeff said, they're 4-0 in national title games, Gino Uyama's women's squad made their way to a record ninth championship with a convincing, and I watched this game, told you, Vic, I was going to watch this game, 79-58 victory over previously unbeaten, 37-0, and UConn was 39-0, winning the first ever championship game between two undefeated programs, men or women, whose team finished 40-0 and now has one more than legendary Tennessee coach Pat Summitt, and combining So men and women, UConn, it proved its mind-numbing record to 13-0 in championship games. So if you see UConn, whether it's men or women, in a championship game, if for some chance they happen to get to the championship game next year, you go to fantasysportsbookcasino.com hotline, I mean, .com website, and place a wager, regardless of what the media may say, that's going up against UConn, because it's almost found money that they're going to win the championship. 40-0, and it was complete domination. I think the at the halftime, it was like a 5 or 6 point lead, maybe a 7 point lead that UConn had, and they took Notre Dame's best shot against two coaches that do not like each other at all. I'm not saying it's hype. They've stated it in front of media publicly. They don't like each other and never will like each other. It's not going to happen. Going into this game, and UConn completely took apart Notre Dame in the second half of this game. You can see the coach on the other side. I don't know. I can't remember her last name, but her first name is Muffet, I should say. Her name is Muffet McGraw. Was totally flabbergasted and didn't know really what to do because her team was getting humiliated and dominated handily. I don't know if anybody saw this game, but I did, and it was a hell of a performance by a basketball team, an undefeated team against another undefeated team. It wasn't even close. Talk to me, anybody who wants to step up and see if, tell me.
How many dunks were in that game?
Excuse me?
How many dunks were in that game?
You know, let me put it this way, and I stated this before. The reason why I like watching women's basketball is just because it's played under the rim. There's no dunking, and it's, in my opinion, it's better basketball because the ball moves more, and it's not a dunk highlight every time someone gets the ball near the basket. So I like watching basketball like that.
Very, very well. He's giving you the politically correct answer. He really likes TNA.
No,
really likes TNA and one of the college
basketball. I have to stick up for Jerry. He's been consistent with those views, and he likes women's basketball. And
yes.
I've had people make fun of me because I used to like to watch women's roller derby. Everybody make fun of me, and I'm telling you, it's on a New York public station late at night. That's a really good sport.
I've seen a lot of action.
It's growing rapidly on a grassroots level. There are some men's teams, but they're not as popular. It's just this really fascinating sport, and just growing rapidly. But everybody busts my chops about it, you know. And
women can be very vicious in a competitive environment. Very vicious.
If I just wanted to look at a bunch of girls running around, I'd put on Telemundo or something, you know.
Hey, Vic, this is a legit sport. With their politically correct answers.
I've been saying this for years. It's nothing new. I've been saying this for years.
Well, we know that. We know that, Jerry. And your pedophilia is okay. I mean, at least you admit it. Now, listen. I understand you like to play watch the game under the rim.
Yes.
It doesn't hurt that the Notre Dame team is somewhat attractive. Of course, you're twice their age, so that's a problem.
Tell you the truth, I wasn't even looking at that. Didn't even look at that at all.
Okay. But this is, and I understand Black's issue about, you know, you not getting excited about pro ball or men's basketball, but women's basketball, you're all over it. I mean, hey, you're a man. I understand.
It has nothing to do with it, but that's okay.
I got you. I got you. But I'll tell you this. Notre Dame and UConn are two very good universities. Both came in there undefeated, and that's the first time, I believe, in women's basketball history that that has happened.
Yep.
And, you know, one walked away completely undefeated, and one took the first loss of their season in the championship game. But I tell you what, it's just like having Pat Summitt in there because you're seeing new legends of female basketball come into play. I say that you got Tennessee's not in the forefront. There are other teams that are in women's basketball, like Maryland, University of Maryland. Mm-hmm. Their female basketball team is way better than their male basketball team.
Yes, it is.
And they continually, you know, do good things, but at the same time, you know, it's not a storied franchise like UConn. Personally, I only like basketball when it's competitive and the pros don't do it, but college basketball does it. Female basketball, I'm not that big on, to be quite honest with you, because, you know, they run the picks, they do the layups, they do technical sound basketball, and
yes.
It's not exciting. It's not exciting, but technically, it's very scientific and good. So, you know, it all depends on what you want in the world. You know, the get me excited or I want to see scientific play. You know, that's what I wrap it up to. Other than your pedophilia, then you're good.
Okay. Let's move on to, because I wanted to get into this because this is probably Black's cup of tea because I'm going to be talking about his boy. One day after wowing the Oakland Raiders staff, former Texas A&M quarterback Johnny Manziel, NFL draft preparation will continue. There's no rest for the weary, and Manziel won't be getting any rest anytime soon. He reports to the along with several draft prospects, including Teddy Bridgewater, Jimmy Garoppolo, I'm not sure about Blake Bortles. It's going to be visiting the Jacksonville Jaguars Tuesday and Wednesday. And Blake Bortles, Teddy Bridgewater, Derek Carr, and Jimmy Garoppolo will be visiting Baltimore also this week. So along with Manziel, who's visited New England, and quite naturally I just talked about Oakland and Minnesota Vikings, he also has, and Black will like this, has an April 21st, 22nd visit scheduled with the Houston Texans. All right. Now the mad dash till May 8th with all these quarterbacks going simultaneously for the most part to Jacksonville and other venues to show their wares. No mention of one of the quarterbacks that I really like and one of the winningest quarterbacks in of all these quarterbacks, which I talked told Vic off-air, of A.J. McCarron, which is fine. And supposedly his pro day went very well. Thoughts? Jeff, I'm going to go to you first. These quarterbacks making the rounds. These are some of the rounds, but there's probably more that aren't published that I don't know about.
You know,
talk to me.
I like McCarron. He's a good kid, but does that mean he's going to be a good NFL quarterback? And has, you know, during the Saban era, has he sent any good quarterbacks to the NFL? You wonder. Now, I think there's a very good chance the Raiders take Manziel if he's available. Because Mark Davis seems to be running the team a lot like his father did. And if you look at a lot of the moves that Davis made in the 80s and 90s and whatever, he was accused of running the team like a trophy case, which meant he liked Heisman Trophy winners and he liked Super Bowl MVPs. And he brought a lot of those guys onto the Raiders. Some of them were very good, and some of them weren't. But he did like the Heisman Trophy winners, and Manziel's got that on the mantelpiece.
Victor.
Well, I know why, and I figured it out, guys. I'm just going to let you guys in on it. But I figured out why Jerry really likes A.J. McCarron. You ready for it?
Oh, boy. Here we go. I know what you're going to say, but go ahead.
No, you're not. If you listen to Mike and Mike, this will ring a bell. And I will always love Chad Pennington. That's who he is. He is the modern era Chad Pennington. Not a very strong arm. Very good decision maker, but will never be a solid pro. Chad Pennington is that, you know, I'm going to manage the game very well for you. Give me a strong defense and a strong running game, and I'll take care of the ball. And, you know, that's all well and good. But if you're looking for a team that's going to say, okay, well, you know, we're going to win a Super Bowl off of our quarterback's shoulders, this guy is not it. I mean, Sanchez was Jerry's other man crush, and you see what happened with him. We all know what happens when he gets his hands on Jermichael Finley. And Jermichael, by the way, still hasn't found a job because he hasn't passed the MRI scans. But I'm telling you, a guy that's skyrocketing, I told Jerry this, and I'm not really sure why, maybe it's because he's worked with Cam Cameron this year, is the kid out of LSU. He's skyrocketing.
Mettenberger.
And then some analysts on ESPN as well as NFL Network have put Blake Bortles as the number one quarterback, or the number one player and the number one quarterback, and Bridgewater has slipped, like, to the second and third round, you know? So I can't really pontificate too much on Jerry's man crush, but he likes, you know, Whitney Houston and Chad Pennington, and his new Chad Pennington is A.J.
Well,
McCarron.
He has made plays when he needs to make plays. I understand he's been on an Alabama team, but he's the only quarterback that has not one, but two championships in college football, and not against shabby talent playing in the SEC. So, you know, these guys, that to me, they're all lumped together. And what separates, who's won the most? Who's won it when it counts? And that count, that is A.J. McCarron. Joe Montana didn't have the strongest arm. There's a lot of quarterbacks in the league that don't have strong, extremely strong arms, but make up with in other ways. The guy's a proven talent. He's a winner, and he comes from the pro-style offense. I don't know what more you need to do. He's not flashy like Johnny Manziel. He's not big and tall like a Ben Roethlisberger, like a Blake Bortles. He's not supposedly got a hell of a deep arm like Teddy Bridgewater or Derek Carr. Derek Carr really doesn't have a strong arm, but some of these other quarterbacks like Jimmy Garoppolo. But he wins and performs when it counts, and that's what you want out of a quarterback. I don't know what more to tell you, but it is what it is. I'm not saying that.
He reminds me of Jason Campbell with the Auburn mob.
No way. He's a lot better quarterback than Jason Campbell. Absolutely, no way.
Not NFL Jason Campbell. I'm talking about Jason Campbell when he played with Auburn. Didn't have to do too much.
Very good analogy.
We'll see. Let me put it this way. Somebody's going to get a diamond in the rough when they get A.J. McCarron. Even if it's not the Houston Texans, I'm telling you, this kid's a winner. He's a winner. That's what counts. Don't care how it gets done. You win football games and you win championships, and he's done it more than any of these other quarterbacks. With that being said,
Green.
I got to
– Green, me. I got to ask you a question, Green. I mean, how is it working with Mike Golick? I really got to know.
Excuse me?
You're missing.
Yeah, you're funny. Mike Greenberg, you are a funny guy. You are a funny guy.
And wow, how'd that go over your head, guy? And the
it didn't go over my head. And Chad Pennington was a good quarterback. He just couldn't stay healthy. That was his problem. He couldn't stay healthy. He was a decent quarterback. He wasn't overwhelming, but he couldn't stay healthy. He was too brittle. Anyway, I'm going to go around the horn because we come to the end of the show. We're in overtime right now. And if you guys want to give your closing thoughts, now is the time. Going to go to Jeff first, then Victor, and then Black, and then we'll get out of here.
Yeah, I wanted to mention, I know a lot of people don't consider this a sport, but it was on the ESPN site that 3 days ago,
yes.
The Ultimate Warrior, his real name was Jim Helwig. Actually, he legally changed his name to Warrior. He passed away literally days after being inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame, and I think the day after appearing at WrestleMania. I must admit, I was not a fan of the Ultimate Warrior.
Wow.
But he was huge, literally and figuratively, in the 80s, and he's just one more pro wrestler to die young. I think he was only 54,
yes.
And I'm not sure about a cause of death. I mean, I know he had some history with steroids. That very well could have had something to do with it. It's just he was one of the biggest names, you know, in that era. You know, wrestling was so popular. WWF was huge, and he was one of their top stars. And he was a very controversial figure. In 2005, he had a poor relationship with many people in the business. And in 2005, the WWE released a DVD, The Self-Destruction of the Ultimate Warrior, and it was all about how difficult he was to work with, his ego, and all this other stuff. And it was on YouTube, but it got taken off a while ago. But he was quite the character, and he did some speaking. He was very controversial, rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. But he just was one of these guys. He did his own thing, and he didn't care what anybody else thought.
Now, you didn't like him because he wasn't a technician, or you didn't like him? What was your personal reason?
Jimmy, he did have a lack of skill in the ring, and he kind of symbolized that era of the WWF. He had a great physique. He had the face paint and whatever, but he didn't have the moves. You know,
what was his big move?
Chopping a guy, and then what was his other move? Shaking the ropes. I mean, come on, those aren't moves. some guys. Jimmy Superfly Snuka had more moves than X-Lax, but he was bad on the microphone. And the Ultimate Warrior was also bad on the microphone. Like, he could act all crazy and stuff, but he had trouble putting a sentence together. You know, a lot of his microphone stuff, it really didn't make sense, you know. He just had this well-earned reputation of just being a very difficult person to work with. The thing is, McMahon was not easy to work for. He was typical of that era. You know, they wanted to bring in the guys who were colorful, with great physiques, but maybe they hadn't paid their dues. Maybe they didn't, have the in-the-ring skills and whatever. And that was him. That was Ultimate Warrior.
Well,
Victor,
I'll say this. With, in regards to Ultimate Warrior, another person, I'm going to say this is Ultimate Warrior, Jerry Tarkanian has just been hospitalized, because of breathing issues. So hopefully the TARP pulls through, but if not, you know, that guy is a legend in college basketball. So prayers for him and his family. The Ultimate Warrior, yeah, Jeff was right. 2 days after getting inducted into the Hall of Fame, he actually died. The day after Raw, coming out of his hotel with his wife, he collapsed and had a cardiac arrest. So it was a heart attack, reportedly, as the reason that's him dying. If you saw the Hall of Fame, he was sweating hard. I mean, I got the lights and all that other stuff. He was sweating really hard. And, you know, when Monday Night Raw came on, he went out there, put the mask on and the coat. He was sweating hard and he was laboring. So, personally, I think it was his the excitement that really got to him. And his heart couldn't take it. You know, I really think it was that. You know, he died at 54, relatively young in the sport. But at the same time, those guys live a very, very hard and rough lifestyle. Very, very hard and rough lifestyle. So prayers out to him and all those that care about him. Next Thursday, I don't know if you guys are familiar. Jeff might be familiar because I know you're the music guy. But we should be having a very, or you guys should be having a very special guest from Smile Empty Soul. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that group, Jeff. Rock group, Smile Empty Soul. Well, their lead singer, Sean, is an avid fantasy baseball guy. And they wanted to come on and talk a little fantasy baseball. So next week, hopefully, the lead singer of Smile Empty Soul should be coming on here to talk a little fantasy baseball. And I just wanted to point out that Jerry is yet again below me in fantasy baseball and getting his butt whooped yet again in fantasy baseball for all this power that he has. It's not showing up, at least early on in the season. But we're going to make a bet. Either it will be a video or cash or both. So you play next week. And if Jerry has the stones to put a bet out there on the table, today, we can do it today, or we can wait until Saturday. But FSP will be giving the master plan the business. That is all. Black, the floor is yours.
Well, as long as this bet takes place on the Fantasy Sports and Politics hotline, I'm all good with it. Man, the passing of the Ultimate Warrior, man, that's a huge blow. He wasn't that technical of a wrestler. He just brought excitement to the ring, man. Had to love that dude. I'm excited for these playoffs. Go Nationals.
Go Nationals.
Yeah.
Season's early. A lot can happen. We'll make that wager on Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the FSB show, where you are the host and I am the co-host. And we'll hash it out on the air exactly. We're definitely going to do a video of whoever loses. We just have to hash it out on what's going to be the parameters of the video. And then maybe a little wager of monetary-wise also. If you will, like Mr. Gardner, we can do that also.
I have no problem with that.
I bet you are feeling very confident. I can see. I just feel it. You've been feeling so confident, but that's okay. I want you to feel as confident as you possibly can be, because the bigger they are, the harder they fall.
I want you to enjoy you, Darvish.
Anyway,
Justin Verlander, Felix Hernandez, all my pitchers and my bats are better than anticipated. And by the way, I get Mr. Reyes back next week. If you want some, come get some.
with that being said, I want to thank all you guys for joining me again. Had a heck of a discussion, a roundtable discussion of various subjects. Tune in next week, people. Same time, same bat channel, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on a Thursday night. We'll be here doing what we do, as we love to do. With that being said, until next week, we're out of here. See ya.
Yeah. It's Mr. Encore. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Check. Fantasy Sports and Politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, log on.